How about we go back in time and refuse to go forward with this terrible idea?
Stay there and monitor the coaxium,
Hans said, sounding like a real pilot for the first time.
Is there any other course you would take if I said we were about to explode?
Beckett asked.
Because you should just assume we're about to explode and get out of here as fast as you can.
Just stay in the cargo hold, Beckett.
The canister still rattled slightly, and Beckett realized they were rattling with the energy within, not without. The coolest canister registered 41 degrees. The power cut out entirely then, leaving Beckett in a dark room, illuminated only by the glow of the cargo. Without the ship's thermostat, it would cool down in here even faster. Yeah, they should just assume they were going to explode. Dryden Voss had once removed Kira's senses to see how she would react as a fighter. He had blinded her, plugged her ears and nose, and smeared a numbing agent all over her body. Kira had had to sense the energy of the opponent, using the abilities taught her by the Tereskasi master that Voss had brought her. The first memory of such a test was pain. She had failed miserably, but she had learned quickly how to use the art to sense the room, even when she didn't have all of her physical senses available to her. After that training, she sometimes found it comforting to have one of her senses removed, especially eyes or ears, because they could trick you just as well as they informed. She could let muscle memory take over. But she had no muscle memory here. She knew Han wanted to go right back to the old dynamic they'd had on Corellia, with her as Han's co-pilot. She'd make the plans, and Han would break them. But they had both changed since childhood. She had been happy to give up her seat to Chewbacca, whom she felt had been nearly vibrating with the need to take over the controls from her clumsy handling. Lando, sore and bleeding and heartbroken, needed someone, and Kira knew how to deal with all of those things. Now, back in the cockpit with the rest of them, Kira felt her old Tereskasi instinct surfacing. With only the sound of auxiliary engines, the Falcon sped on, inertia and perhaps gravity drawing it closer to the void. No one spoke. The electrical charges nearly danced on her skin, and she could taste the acrid electricity on her tongue. What she wanted to tell them was that they weren't alone. It could be that a TIE fighter had exited the maelstrom with them, unable to fire due to electrical failure. But she didn't think so. This was something else. They probably wouldn't believe her. She wasn't a Jedi. Not that Han had ever believed in them anyway. And this wasn't the Force. But Tereskasi had been developed to counter the Jedi. She knew enough to feel the spaces around her and sense something. The cockpit felt like that first time Dryden had desensitized her and dropped her in the training room. Dark, tense, discomforting.
Nice work, Han,
Lando said from behind her. Han turned, his face illuminated by a strip of emergency LEDs on the console.
Hey, I'm not the one who put in a flux regulator and a minibar.
Chewbacca moaned again, and Kira found it much more ominous than his rages.
Okay, everybody just stay calm, Lando said.
He rummaged around in the tools he had with him, and then took out two thin torches, handing Kira one of them. They peered into the breaker box on the back wall of the cockpit and tried to puzzle out the jumble of wires. Han joined them, his ability as a pilot nearly useless with no power. With his good hand, Lando held his light steady. Kira searched around with hers while she and Han peered through the seemingly chaotic mess of wires to figure out what needed fixing. Electrical systems were something she felt at home with, having had to sabotage more than one for Dryden's various schemes. Now she was doing the reverse. And whether you were inside a crime lord's fortress or a small freighter, electrical systems were the same. Han panted beside her, sweat standing out on his face from the light of the torch. Getting chased by the Empire is better than this, he muttered. I can't help but feel like we're not alone out here. Kira opened her mouth to agree with him, but Beckett returned from checking on the cargo.
What's happening? How much longer?
Kira spotted the errant wire and focused her light on it.
Hang on. I think we've got it,
she said triumphantly, and twisted the wire home. Sparks flew and popped. The lights flickered, and then shone strong as the power returned to the Falcon's systems. Her exterior lights flipped on again and illuminated the space around them. Han whooped and jumped back into the pilot's chair, and then went silent. Kira turned and saw what she and Han apparently had been sensing. A gargantuan, wet, glistening wall lay ahead of the Falcon, directly in their path. It pulsed gently.
What is that?
Lando whispered, fear taking the breath from him. No one answered. They couldn't even speculate what it was. But Kira knew they didn't want to fly into it. Then, as if irritated by the Falcon's lights, the fleshy wall twitched and then split. And a hatch, no, an eyelid, opened. Something very large was awake and looking right at them. One thing Kira had learned as lieutenant to a crime lord, it wasn't always satisfying to be right. As one, the cockpit screamed, even as instinct kicked in and Han angled the Falcon straight down from the giant creature to fly at a 90-degree angle to the horrific pulsing mass of its eye. Was there only one eye? Others opened as they flew. Every meter of the thing seemed to be waking up. He tried to think what kind of creature could be the size of an Imperial Star Destroyer and just hang out in electrical storms in space. What are you doing? What is that thing? Kira shouted. Look out! Lando shouted as Han saw it. He had gone from the creature's eye to a much worse area, its body, which consisted of a mass of writhing tentacles, each one crackling with electricity. The smallest, Han speculated, could easily wrap around the Falcon. The largest, well, he didn't want to think about those right now. The eyes had merely opened up, but the tentacles were much more active, each of them reaching for the ship, suckers and stingers at the ready to rip it open, or perhaps just catch it and devour it whole. Han now had to fly like never before, dodging each tentacle swipe even as another one came at them from another angle. The tentacles tried to form a cage around them, locking them in one place to squeeze smaller and smaller. But Han saw an opening near one of the smaller tentacles and pushed the Falcon's engines to get out of it. "This is the Maw?" he shouted over his shoulder at Lando. Lando wasn't helpful.
What? No, this is a living... I don't know what this is, but it's not the Maw, I don't think.
So the Maw is worse than this?
Well,
Lando said, the bravado stripped from his voice.
I think we're about to find out.
Han wished he could go back to simpler days, when he just had a giant space tentacle beast to worry about. Because ahead of him lay the Maw. A planet-sized gravity well. It glowed a faint amber, swirling and sucking and inviting all area debris to fall in and be crushed inside of it. The Falcon was a good ship, but Han didn't think it was strong enough to withstand a gravity well. And as much as he'd like to see the other side, he didn't think they would survive the trip. He had to think. Did they want to be crushed or eaten? Where they could blow up the coaxium and deprive both nightmares of the Falcon and her crew. Han snapped out of his musings as he realized everyone was looking at him. Chewie had settled in as co-pilot. Lando was too injured and too busy nursing L3 and her new home. And whatever she had learned from Dryden Voss, piloting a ship was not Kira's specialty. It was down to him. I'm gonna be a pilot. Best in the galaxy. He'd said these words once, and believed them. And the best pilot in the galaxy didn't just give in to certain death.
That's a gravity well?
He said.
Wait, I've got an idea. Don't fly toward it, Han, Beckett shouted.
There was nothing to lose at this point. And then he realized what they could lose and maybe get out of this alive. He searched around the console for a button. There it is. Lando glanced at what he was doing, and his eyes grew wide.
Wait, he said. That's my...
Han had already done it. The Falcon's escape pod launched from the front and shot straight for the Maw. He'd worried he couldn't remotely engage the autopilot, but the pod's automatic launch thrusters, plus their own velocity, plus the gravity well of the Maw, all took care of it. Now the monster had to go for the pod and not the Falcon. On the sensors, he could see the mammoth creature pause, uncertain, and then decided on the smaller vessel, streaking past the Falcon to its death in the gravity well. Even as the Maw grew closer and closer, the creature reached out its beak and all of its tentacles to grab the pod before the Maw gained its prize. Never mind that it had passed the point of no return. First the pod, then the creature went into the Maw. And the Falcon's crew saw the horror that a gravity well could visit on a carbon-based life form. Time seemed to slow as the creature stretched out, the tentacles being devoured by the gravity well before the rest of the body could get there. It swelled, its eyes bulging, as it reversed its flight and tried to escape, its tentacles writhing madly, seeking purchase on anything. It would take a long time to die if it fought, but it was not their problem anymore.
She found a way out,
Lando said, reading the navicomputer.
90 degrees, to the left.
He screwed up his face in frustration, just as if he had been dealing with the recalcitrant droid in person.
Ish, he amended. Left-ish.
Han pulled the yoke, but it might as well have been turned to stone.
Can't!
What? Lando said, head snapping up.
Why not? We're stuck. It's taking everything we have just to not get sucked into the Maw.
The Falcon creaked and shuddered as the engines fought against the gravity. Han tried to angle the ship a different way from the Maw, hoping to reach a point where it would be easier to break free. But everything he did made things worse. The ship shuddered more than ever. And Han was suddenly aware of the tentacles reaching from the Maw.
And now we're going backward. We don't have the power.
Kira's gaze sharpened as something occurred to her.
But we do have power.
It's not like I'm holding anything back, Han snapped.
No, I mean we've got enough coaxium on board to power a dozen Star Destroyers.
Han considered this.
Injected into the fuel line?
She nodded.
He shook his head. We blow up the ship!
Lando rubbed his chin.
Not into the fuel line, but if we put a drop of it into the fusion reactor,
it might give us the kick we need, Han finished.
All right, I'm on it,
Beckett shouted, turning and running from the cockpit.
It might blow us all to hell,
Lando said.
What are our other options?
Kira retorted, pointing to the Maw where the beast was still impossibly fighting, but growing smaller with each second. Han gripped the yoke tighter, even though it wasn't moving. The ship continued to shudder, and systems were starting to fail as external equipment and panels began flying off and getting sucked into the Maw. All of Lando's modifications, his sensor arrays, his antennas, his cosmetic enhancements, went flying past the window and into the void.
They might as well do the coaxium thing. They were out of options at this point.
He glanced at Chewie, who was rigid with tension, but still watching the readouts and focusing on the shields and engines. He was a good co-pilot. Han wondered if they'd ever fly together again. The Wookiee grumbled, panic only slightly infecting his tone.
I know, Han said. We're getting dragged in a circle. The minute that coaxium hits the fuel line, we're gonna tear out of here.
And the minute we get clear of the maelstrom, we make the jump to light speed.
It was taking everything he had to keep the ship angled in the proper direction, out of the maelstrom, even as he fought to keep it from the gravity well.
He wiped sweat from his forehead in an impatient gesture.
Beckett!
He shouted.
Hurry up! We only have one shot at this thing!
Shut up and let me do this!
Beckett, I'm gonna count you down!
Hans said, and gave him a moment to disagree and say he wasn't ready, that they should just go on into the gravity well without him. But the comm was silent.
Three!
The Falcon bucked beneath him, and he gripped the yoke so hard he felt his bones creak. Chewie roared beside him, pushing more power to the shields, even as the power they gave out was just sucked into the well behind them.
Two!
Han gripped the yoke as tightly as he could and leaned forward, intent.
Now!
Now?
Beckett confirmed.
Now!
Han, Kira, and Lando shouted. The Falcon's engines coughed once, twice, and then started powering down in a slow whine. As the engines lost their power, the ship's slide backwards started in earnest, and nothing Han did would make it fight anymore. The shuddering intensified. This time it wasn't the ship's engines fighting, but the protective hull plating Lando had paid to upgrade his ship was being stripped off, piece by piece. The ship was being torn apart around them. Maybe Beckett had dropped the syringe. Maybe he had been pulled out of a breach and into the maw. Maybe the coaxium they'd stolen was fake. Maybe they were all dead already.
Oh, shit.
Lando said, and they were all thrown back in their seats as the liquid hyperfuel reignited the Falcon's engines. Han gave a quick glance to the readouts and saw they burned green, a temperature the ship politely indicated was perhaps too hot. He couldn't have done anything about it if he'd wanted to. The ship shot forward, free of the maw, and accelerating exponentially.
Left!
Shouted Lando.
More left!
I'm working on it,
Han grumbled, pulling the yoke as far as he could. But the force of their acceleration was making any deviation from a straight line difficult. Beckett made it back into the cockpit, holding onto the frame to fight against the acceleration.
The canisters don't look too good.
How not good?
Han asked.
They're cracking. I don't think we have much time.
They were nearing the Carbonberg field now, going much faster than they had when they'd entered it. And that had been a navigational nightmare. Han wished old Commodore Almuden were here. He didn't think the old veteran would have been impressed, but it would have been nice to take him with them when the ship exploded.
I thought you were all talk, kid,
Beckett said, as Han maneuvered around the bergs and fought the Falcon's acceleration.
But you're a hell of a pilot.
Thanks,
Han said. He glanced back at Lando.
Hyperspace coordinates set?
Destination, yes. But we need a starting point, and I don't know where we are,
Lando said.
Then make an educated guess,
Han said. The readouts in front of him were going haywire. The ones that did work were all flashing red and indicating they all would probably die any time now.
The second we're out of here, we've got to jump,
Han said.
Otherwise...
A great crash sounded, and the Falcon shuddered as a Carbonberg slipped into the trajectory from an unseen angle. The ship's integrity held, but they were knocked off course, careening toward a heavier gauntlet than the one they were trying to navigate. Chewie let out a bark of surprise, and Kira's eyes narrowed.
We're going to die, aren't we?
She asked, her voice calm. Han looked from her to the Wookiee, understanding what he'd said in the quick bark.
Yeah, I see it too, pal,
he said. Ahead of them, two Carbonbergs floated toward each other. But beyond them was a sliver of inky black space and beautiful, clear stars. The way out of the maelstrom. Han measured the distance and thought fast. Chewie groaned. He pointed out the crack, but didn't think they could make it. It was their only chance, even as the gap between the Carbonbergs narrowed.
Lando!
He shouted.
Ready.
Chewie, when I tell you, kick out the thrusters and jump to light speed. Kira stood in alarm.
What are you doing?
Remember the alley we squeezed through in the Santh shipyards?
Yeah, I remember it didn't work.
This time it's gonna, he said.
Blaze of glory, huh, kid?
Beckett said, leaning against the doorframe in a too casual stance.
I just want to say it was nice knowing all of you.
One,
Hans said, focusing on the ever-shrinking gap. Beside him, Chewie groaned softly, putting his hand on the light-speed lever.
Yes, I know what I'm doing,
Han thought impatiently.
Two?
Kira got in the jump seat behind Han, putting her hand on his shoulder and squeezing hard. Han jerked the yoke and brought the ship on its side to slide through the gap, shouting to Chewie and Shriwook,
Three!
Like threading a needle, the Falcon slipped through the gap effortlessly. There was a moment of complete claustrophobia, and Han was sure they would be crushed. And then, they were free.
Chewie hit a lever, and space stopped, then spread before them in a long road until they winked
far, far away from Kessel and her cursed run. Chapter 17. Han wasn't sure if Savareen had many incoming ships demand immediate assistance, or else they would blow up and take a good chunk of the planet with them. But when he calmed in that they were arriving with a large amount of unstable coaxium and needed help the moment they landed, the Savareen people were more than willing to step up to the task. Han couldn't take the time to appreciate the planet, even though he always liked worlds with no Star Destroyers floating in the skies and no fish markets filled with eels. The drifting sand dunes and the seas beyond were so unlike Corellia. He brought the Falcon down on a landing pad outside the refinery Beckett indicated, and immediately was met with a line of Savareen workers ready to move the coaxium via hoses from the ship directly into the refinery. Energized by the amazing realization that they had survived everything they'd experienced in the last day, Han jumped to assist them. Once he and Chewie had unloaded the final canister, Han pointed to the Falcon and proudly said,
See that ship? She made the Kessel run in 12 parsecs.
The worker looked from Han to the Falcon and shrugged, either disbelieving or unimpressed. Chewie grunted, and Han replied, Not if you round down. He hoped that the Savareen didn't speak Shriwook. Lando stood on the landing pad, looking up at the Falcon. Han couldn't tell if the pain on his face was from his shoulder or the state of the ship. But he could guess. The Falcon was a completely different vessel now on the surface. The blaster attacks on Kessel, the fight with the Ties, the damage from the Carbonbergs. And then, of course, the stripping of cosmetic modifications in the gravity well of the Maw all had made their mark. Often many marks. And scratches. It looked 10 years older. And that was 10 hard-used years, not a decade under Lando's tender care. Han threw his arm around Lando and grinned.
She's a hell of a ship.
Lando turned his head slowly and glared at him.
I hate you.
I know, he said.
Lando left him and went up the ramp without looking back, mumbling something about being in his quarters. Han decided that he would remind Lando that he'd said he wouldn't care what happened to the ship as long as they escaped with their lives later. L3 had brought about a droid revolution, possibly the first one in history.
Quick check of all historical records available to her.
Possibly not the first, but probably the most effective. She'd been a hero. And then the Millennium Falcon had made the Kessel run in a little over 12 parsecs. Not bad. She knew Lando loved this ship more than almost anything. Not more than her, of course. She was a special case. But the ship was now something more. Something bigger. She had no arms with which to modify herself. That was grating. Both inside and outside the ship, she could immediately see three or four things tools and scrap she could have used to put herself back together if her body had been salvageable. If. The Falcon showed her images of the torn-apart husk that had been her body. She had to admit that even she wouldn't have been able to save herself. It took some time, but she admitted this existence was better than no existence. The Falcon, Millennium Falcon, that was her new name, definitely not as good as L337, was near to destroyed. The outside was unrecognizable, having lost several heat shields to the Maw. She was blind in numerous areas, thanks to lost antennas and sensors. She would need considerable repairs, from one broken body into another. She felt a momentary rise in indignation against Lando, but it faded. Better a ship than a dead droid. Better a busted ship than the dinner of a Summa Verminoth. Still, her memory storage had increased thanks to the installation into the Falcon, and the data that she always had to plug into was accessible to her any time now. She knew everything the ship knew, and immediately. She took stock. She could tell they were on Sabarine. That was easy, since it was her navigation that had gotten them there. The wind was gentle but steady, and there was a storm coming in tomorrow morning. 337 workers toiled in the refinement plant, and several had been called to come in and handle the Falcon's unexpected and dangerous business. Han stood outside the ship, gazing at her with something like love, which gave her conflicted feelings. The part of her that was still L3 was loyal to Lando, but the part of her that was the Falcon would love whoever treated the ship well. Han had been okay, if annoying. She felt him growing on her, and realized that was the ship's personality merging with hers, slowly. It was a strange process. She didn't feel like she was changing or losing herself, just that she was becoming something more. Only mechanical beings could do this, she realized, and was convinced again of the superiority of droids. Beckett spoke with the foreman on the other side of the landing pad. Kira walked around the landing pad looking shaken and withdrawn. Chewbacca remained within, checking readouts and taking note of what they had lost with the escape. She appreciated that. The Wookiee cared about the ship with a compassion she had rarely seen in Tex. Lando was brooding in his room, rearranging his cape collection and violently throwing aside the ones that had been too damaged by tearing, fire, or blood. She tried to read what was going on outside the ship, with frustrating blind spots due to damage. She did a deep scan of every system, desperately searching for any information, and found something on her hull, encrusted in carbonite. In a quick panic, she scanned the atmosphere and the space beyond as far as she could. Now she had to figure out how to get Lando's attention. The homing beacon, hidden on her hull, had done its job. Someone was coming. Beckett had been speaking with the foreman, gesturing widely with his hands. Han wished L3 had been there to translate, but Beckett seemed to be holding his own. Finally, he approached Han with a grin.
"We didn't lose a drop in the transfer," he said proudly,
pointing up the dunes to a massive refinery. It was old and rusty, and didn't look like it could refine a cup of water. But it had been built to survive the elements, both the coaxium inside and the wind and water and salt of the outside. Heavy metal plates were riveted together to form a bulbous area, standing on coaxium pipes that ran deep under the sands to the rest of the refinery.
"Not too friendly, are they?"
Han asked Beckett, gesturing to the foreman, who glowered at them.
"They ain't paid for their congeniality, kid. Now come on."
They headed for the refinery, with Kira and Chewbacca following them. Lando had elected to stay on the Falcon, by way of shouting expletives at Han when he'd called in to say they were heading out. Han halfway wished he'd stayed with him. The midday sun was searing their skin as it hung large in the sky, and the wind pushed insistent sand under their clothes and into the corner of their eyes and mouths. Kira had found a shelter with a spigot and was taking a moment to splash cold water on her face and neck. She looked pensive. Han let Beckett and Chewie go on ahead as he approached her. He wasn't sure how this conversation was going to go, but it had to start somewhere.
"So, where's your boss?"
he asked.
"He'll be here,"
she said, not looking at him.
"Then what?"
he asked, not willing to let it drop.
"You delivered. You'll get paid. By your ship."
She smiled, tired, as if she were happy Han was getting what he wanted, even though she wouldn't be able to.
"That's not what I'm asking," he said.
"I know what you mean,"
Kira said, scanning the horizon.
"Can't happen."
"'Cause you're with Dryden?"
he asked, a cold stone in his belly. Why did he think it was so hot out here? It was clearly the coldest place in Three Systems.
"I'm not with him," she said impatiently. "But I do owe him. We have a history."
"He bought you,"
Han said bluntly.
"How long do you have to pay that back?"
Kira looked at him sharply, as if he'd hit a nerve.
"Everybody serves somebody, Han. Even Dryden Vos."
"Hey,"
he said, but she wouldn't let him finish.
"Trust me. You do not want to make an enemy of the Crimson Dawn. And that's exactly what we'd be doing if I left here with you."
Han felt resentment and rebellion surge in his chest. He hadn't gone through all of that. Firefights and tentacles and carbonite and fancy caped guys who apparently held grudges, just to fall into line to some master. She kept saying she had changed, but didn't accept that he had changed a lot, too.
"I'm not afraid of Dryden or Crimson Dawn. You saw what happened back there. I can handle myself. I'm not the kid you knew on Corellia. Not anymore."
She raised an eyebrow.
"No? Then what are you?"
He drew himself up.
"I'm an outlaw."
She smiled involuntarily. It wasn't cruel and calculated. It was the smile of an older sister, whose kid brother had just found a stick and pretended to use it as a blaster, which made it even crueler.
"Okay, outlaw. Tell yourself whatever you want. But I just might be the only person in this galaxy who knows what you really are."
"Oh, yeah? What's that?"
She smiled and blinked at him, surprised he didn't know.
"You're the good guy."
He shook his head.
"That's wrong. No, definitely not the good guy. I'm a terrible human being. I'm prepared to do whatever's..."
"Hey! They said when it's ready, we can collect it up there,"
Beckett called to them, gesturing again to the refinery. He waved at them to keep walking. Han wanted to keep the argument going, but Kira was walking away. Good. What was good about smuggling, gambling, inciting riots, and shutting down whole mines? They were playing fetch and carry for a crime boss. That wasn't good. She was wrong. That's all there was to it. He ran to catch up to Beckett, who had found a small cantina outside the refinery, made mostly of a broken-down shack with blankets for walls and ceiling where there were holes. People sat in the shade and sipped from mugs, ignoring the group. A few stood at the bar, leaning on it and being served a clear liquid. So this was a place for the workers to have refreshment at lunch or after work. Maybe they even enjoyed the beaches and sea. But Han doubted it. These people didn't look like they had any fun at all. Ever. Beckett led the way to the bar and signaled to the barkeep.
"Here you make a mean brandy,"
he said, holding up four fingers. The barkeep glanced up and reached for a bottle. Then, a modulated voice shouted from outside the bar.
Beckett!
Beckett sighed like a man who is tired of being pursued. He turned around slowly and walked out of the cantina, deprived of brandy and going somewhere far worse than a broken-down bar on a far-flung world. He had sworn there had been no one around for clicks. But now, 12 newcomers faced them. They weren't Saverine natives. They weren't with Dryden Voss. They were cloaked, protected with cobbled-together armor, and each wore a large, frightening mask. And at the center of them, with the largest mask, was Enfys Nest. Han's hand went immediately to the blaster Beckett had given him, which already felt solidly in its right place at his hip. Beckett placed a hand on his arm and glanced at him sidelong.
Don't.
They were greatly outnumbered, so impulsively jumping in firing might not be the best idea. Han took his hand off his weapon and lifted his arms in surrender. Somehow, Nest's raiders had tracked them from Vandor to Saverine. How had they managed that? After everything they had been through, he could barely believe they'd be stopped at the last moment by the very people who had forced this trip in the first place. His companions were tense but submissive, all showing their hands and waiting for Nest to make the first move. The mysterious figure spoke, voice modulation making them impossible to identify further.
"You must have known you'd see me again."
Beckett gave a little nod.
"I was counting on it. Just didn't plan on it being so soon is all. Of course, now you've got a problem."
The plan burst forth in Han's mind, and he interrupted, stepping forward.
"Big problem! You happen to notice that freighter down by the water? You know what's on it? About 30 hired guns. All I gotta do is give them the signal, and you're surrounded."
He snapped his fingers, as if that was the signal. Beckett was staring at him. Then, the ground shook slightly, and the rickety buildings around them creaked as the sound of engines drowned everything else out. Han saw, with unbelieving hope, the Millennium Falcon rise into the sky, as if Lando really had heard his signal and was coming to help. And then, it soared higher, out of sight, gaining altitude and leaving Saverine and the rest of the crew behind. His plan probably couldn't have failed in a more spectacular way. Han closed his eyes briefly and gritted his teeth, thinking about what he would do to Lando if they got out of this alive. Then he turned to Beckett.
"Sorry, you go."
Beckett's face told Han everything he needed to know, mainly that Han was an idiot. He turned back to Nest.
"By the time the coaxium's refined, Crimson Dawn'll be here. So go ahead and kill us. They're just gonna kill you back."
Kira stepped forward, the imperious stature she'd displayed on Kessel returning.
"Hang on. Maybe there's a compromise that doesn't involve so much killing?"
"Yeah," Han said, backing her up. "We should at least explore other options."
"Save your breath, kid,"
Beckett muttered darkly.
"They're marauders. They don't care who or what they destroy. All they know how to do is take."
Han thought of Rio's blood on his hands, of Val dying pointlessly in the explosion. Fresh anger flared in his chest. How could they negotiate with the person who had already killed two of Beckett's crew? He dropped his hands to his sides, as if relaxing, but he was at the ready in case the shooting started. Enfys made a sound that seemed to be something like a chuckle, but Han wasn't sure. For some reason, she was using that moment to remove the frightening bone mask and show her face. He hadn't known what to expect, whether it was an alien species or an old warrior, experienced and battle-scarred. but the youthful human face that appeared shocked him to his core. She couldn't be older than 16. She had long, curly, reddish-brown hair, light brown skin, and freckles all over her face. Han wondered what she'd experienced in her years to bring her to this moment. He and Kira hadn't had an easy time of it, but neither of them could have led a gang to pursue smugglers from planet to planet. He guessed the two of them had had an easy, pampered life compared with Enfys Nest. No one spoke. She shook out her hair and put the mask on the ground. Her face was slightly flushed from the heat as she calmly took them all in, and then looked up at the refinery thoughtfully.
I need a drink.
Everyone followed her quietly to the cantina, where the barkeep already had a drink ready for her. She faced them, took a long swig, and then sighed.
There's a story about a band of mercenaries who came to a peaceful planet, she said,
sounding very young without the voice modulation.
They had a resource that these men coveted, so they took it. They kept coming back, taking more, till finally the people resisted. When the ravagers returned and demanded their tribute, the people shouted back with one voice.
She turned to face them, her gaze furious.
No more.
Han stared at her, taking in every word.
So they cut the tongue out of every man, woman, and child.
She continued, her voice softening.
That was many years ago. Do you know what that pack of animals became?
The residents of Savarine, also in the cantina, had been listening along with Han's crew. One old woman nodded.
Tell them,
Enfys invited, and the old woman dipped her finger into her mug and then drew a symbol on the vane of a windmill.
A rising sun, the symbol of the Crimson Dawn, just like the brand Kira had on her arm. Chewie, who'd been silent up to now, moaned at the brutality of their employer, and Kira stared stonily back at the girl. Han wondered if she'd known this. She had to know how brutal her boss was. He had threatened to kill them all on a whim on his yacht. He finally got a cold sense of what she may have meant when she said he didn't want to know what she had done in their time apart.
Crimson Dawn and the rest of the five syndicates have committed unspeakable crimes across the galaxy,
Enfys said.
Beckett was unmoved.
Says you.
No,
she said.
Says them.
She gestured to her group, and each removed their mask. They stood, males and females of many different races, including a Mimbanese warrior, reminding Han of his brief time invading their home planet. Some were visibly scarred. Some showed the anguish of emotional scars on their faces. They looked stonily back at them, as if daring them to question further the atrocities they had experienced at the hands of Crimson Dawn.
Each of our worlds has been brutalized by the syndicates,
Enfys said. Han looked at Kira, whose face told him nothing, but she was a little paler than before.
Enfys faced them squarely.
Crimson Dawn will use their profits from the coaxium you stole to tyrannize system after system, in league with the Empire.
And what would you use it for?
Beckett sneered, not believing that this girl was a force for pure good.
The same thing my mother would have used it for, if she'd survived and still wore the mask.
She indicated the mask at her feet.
To fight back. We're not marauders. We're allies. And the war's just beginning.
Beckett still stared at her, and Han wondered if he'd even blinked the whole time they had listened to this story. He couldn't read the old man's face, but he didn't look disbelieving anymore. Han wasn't sure what he looked like, but then he turned and walked away. The mood eased. Hands stopped hovering near weapons. Weapons already out dropped slightly. Beckett was gone. Chewie had also wandered away, head down, thinking about whatever Wookiees thought about. Kira stayed where she was, retreating inward to her own thoughts. Han felt very alone. He wanted to discuss further, ask Enfys Nest questions, find a hole in her horrific story to make it not so bad. He wanted to just finish the job and walk away. That's what smugglers did, right? It didn't matter who did what with whatever you smuggled. All that mattered was you got paid and survived to do another job. That was his goal in the world. Get a ship, do jobs, survive. You took care of yourself in this galaxy. A little Savarine girl had spotted Chewie and decided he was going to play a game with her. He snapped out of his thinking and grunted at her, and then started to chase her around the sand. Her happy squeals broke the tension that had washed over them like a dark cloud. If you take care of only yourself in this galaxy, who takes care of people like this?
Han strode up the dune to where Beckett was staring thoughtfully at an old graveyard. He looked old then, like a man who had done far too much in very little time. Like a man who had lost everything and had nothing left to fight for. Like he had gone to the graveyard to do more than think. Enfys wore her strain in her eyes, with the energy of youth keeping her going. Beckett wore his strain on his back, in the lines around his mouth and eyes, and in the thinning hair that blew in the wind. Kind of like Enfys when it came down to it, although her strain only showed in her eyes. His shoulders slumped slightly when Han approached, like he knew what Han was going to say and wasn't up for a fight. "We can't give the coaxium to Crimson Dawn," Han said. Beckett gave him the half-grin that Han had begun to equate with Beckett thinking he was very young and very stupid. It rankled him, but he kept his cool.
"You joining the cause, Han Solo?"
"Just trying to make it out alive," Han said,
which was honestly his ultimate goal for any day if you looked close enough.
"Got a plan?"
Why did people keep asking him that?
"You think I'd come up here without one?"
Beckett caught his dodge immediately.
"Doesn't answer my question."
"I've got the beginnings of one," he admitted. "A way to get our credits, get out from under Crimson Dawn's thumb, and put Dryden Vos out of business."
Beckett's eyebrows went up in response, mock impressed that Han's plan was so far-reaching.
"And maybe get your girlfriend back while you're at it, huh?
Let me tell you something, kid.
You did not tangle with Dryden. Because unlike us, he actually does travel with hired guns. His own private army of enforcers."
Han jerked his head back to their new... allies definitely wasn't the word. And neither was friends. Newcomers, then? Enfys Nest, who stood with Kira and Sung, looking up at them.
"So does Enfys."
"That kid."
He wouldn't stop sticking his nose where it didn't belong. Joining them on Mimban. Coming up with the Kessel plan. Now, instead of just doing the delivery, he had some grand scheme to take down Dryden Vos. What happened to do the job, get the loot, get paid, and go on to the next job? Why did it have to get complicated? This time the kid did have a plan, though, and he spoke fast, the words tumbling out of his mouth like he couldn't hold them in. Once he was done, he stepped back as if giving the plan room to breathe. He grinned confidently.
"Dicey,"
Beckett said, hands on his hips as he thought.
"A lot of ways it could go south."
A lot of ways. Try all the ways. The kid was crazy. "That's why I need my partner," Han said. Beckett held back a bitter laugh. partners were what you were after years of saving each other's skins. Partners were like Rio, who could drive them out of a hot situation and keep them fed and laughing when they took a moment to breathe. Partners were like Val, who had kept him alive when the blasters were firing, and happy when they weren't. This kid was a long way from partner status. Damn, but he missed her. He brought himself back to the conversation.
Situation like this, you don't need one perfect plan. You need 10 good ones, so you can change gears if things go wrong,
Beckett explained.
And you gotta be a genius for 10 good plans. And you're no genius.
He wanted the kid to wake up, to realize his limitations. His ambition would get him killed one day. But Beckett doubted Han even heard the insult. The kid pushed on.
But my plan still isn't bad.
Are you in?
Beckett looked down for a while, thinking. He was so damn tired of it all. He hadn't even given himself a chance to mourn. But this was the way this business went. He looked down the dune at where Enfys, Nest, and Kira watched them. She'd lost people, too, in the fight over the conveyance. Chewie had killed one on the speeder bike, and Rio had killed the one who attacked him. This wasn't a game where you kept grudges. Grudges meant you wouldn't have anyone left to work with after a few years. He raised a hand briefly to Enfys. He wouldn't help Han with his insane plan, but he wouldn't bear the girl any ill will. She raised her hand back to him. That was done. Now there was just Han to deal with. And he looked so hopeful. So expecting that Beckett would do the right thing. Someday he'd understand that this was business, not a crusade. He sighed.
Not this time,
he said, meeting Han's eyes.
I'm leaving.
He paused a moment, and then affection for the kid won over. He was a hell of a pilot.
You want out, you should come with me.
Han stared at him, betrayal etched across his face. Somewhere along the way, he had lost sight of the plan. He'd gotten some sort of noble focus and couldn't believe Beckett didn't have one, too.
I thought you didn't believe in running,
Han said.
I prefer it to dying,
Beckett said, and then saw he had hurt Han. A sliver of regret wedged into his chest.
Oh, kid, come on. Don't be sore.
I think you know I'd do it for you,
Han said. He was desperately reaching for some kind of connection that he had thought was there. Did he think that was enough?
Beckett looked thoughtfully around, taking in the refinery, Enfys Nest, the spot the Falcon had recently occupied.
He briefly wished he was on the Falcon, even with that fashion-obsessed gentleman. He wished Val were still alive. He wished they were still on Mimban and had never met this kid. He was going to have to find a way off this planet. He sighed and started back down the dune. The kid was a good pilot, though.
Beckett tried to bridge the widening gap between them as he walked away.
If by some miracle you make it out of here,
he said over his shoulder,
find me on Tatooine.
What's on Tatooine?
Heard about a job. Some big shot gangster putting a crew together,
Beckett said.
Yeah, that'll be the one.
He thought about the gangster, and his stomach rolled over a bit. But he couldn't choose his work by the appearance or smell of his bosses.
The one?
Han asked.
My last score. Still got debts to pay before I can go back to Glee Anselm. And learn to play the Valacord.
His voice hitched slightly as he thought about Val. But he didn't turn around so Han could see his pain.
Good luck, Beckett,
Han said, finally letting him go. Beckett nodded. He knew he wouldn't be seeing the kid on Tatooine, but it was nice to leave on a hopeful note. despite the wretched damage done to it. The Falcon did indeed move faster even after the coaxium drip. Lando wondered if it had changed the engines permanently. Trying to assuage his guilt for leaving, Lando walked around the ship and tallied up the damage Han and his friends had done. The wreckage to the exterior, the plates, the sensors, then the fire damage inside, and the damage to his capes. He was into the thousands of credits when the navicomputer chirped that it had done the calculations to jump out of the space around Savarine. He smoothed his cape to the side and sat in the captain's seat, looking automatically at the co-pilot's seat. She still wasn't there. She'd never be there again. He rubbed his face and prepared to jump to a world that had a favorite bar he hadn't been thrown out of yet. In front of him, a terminal lit up, and words started to stream across it.
Lando!
His heart leapt.
Ill? Can you communicate?
Not long. Full integration. Falcon. Computer. Soon.
I'm so sorry, was all he could think to say.
Why ever hang you lot?
To see the galaxy? Be a freedom fighter? Droid rights?
He was desperate for her to hang on longer.
Not worth.
Oh, don't be like that.
What expect when installed me, Captain?
He gave a strangled laugh.
I didn't think I'd ever talk to you again, for starters.
I tell you, think, as long as I... Words. You tossed. Body and installed. Brain. Ship. I'm bound. Forever. Funny. Ended up droid slave to useless humans after everything.
Lando smiled. She'd been able to form a full sentence when she was insulting humans.
That's my girl. Ill, you're not a slave. Never,
he said, talking to the terminal, but unsure of where to look.
Your body was irreparable. I had to put you in the Falcon before you started losing data and personality. It was there to let you die.
He didn't add that the installation of her navigational data had been necessary to save all of the humans' lives, too. If she didn't remember that part, all the better.
About time left, guys.
He missed her voice. Was she being ironic here?
I had some droids to rescue, he muttered.
Would make heart swell, pride if had body. Which I don't. Pardon if skeptical.
You didn't have a heart when you had a body,
Lando reminded her.
And staying there is suicide. Like it was suicide to stay in Kessel space after we'd been snagged by the Maw. If I had stayed, I'd have died alongside them. I left Savarine so you and I could keep going. And anyway, if I was gone, then who knows what would have ended up salvaging you?
The very thought of someone other than him flying the ship, or scrapping it, made him nauseated.
Survivor.
He tried to think of the tone of voice she would use if she'd said this. Flat and sardonic? Grudgingly understanding? Subtle hint of a question?
Yeah,
he said.
Always have been.
The words stopped scrolling, and the screen returned to the usual navigational charts and equations. He wondered if she were well and truly gone.
Ill?
What if asked, freed?
Lando had been expecting, but also dreading this question. He sighed.
Ill, you're part of the Falcon now. You can't just be taken out and thrown into a droid body again.
Sound weak. Like human. Fitting.
Look at it this way. You have more computing power, more memory than you had when you were a droid. You are a Corellian freighter that can jump into hyperspace. Even if you won't be able to communicate directly, your personality is still here, making you unique
among all the ships in the galaxy.
He placed his hand on the terminal, a sad smile on his face.
And we're still together. My best friend, the best co-pilot ever, is still with me.
Flatterer.
So it's sort of like you own me, instead of the other way around, he offered. The cursor on the terminal blinked a few times.
Harder. Talk. Was fun. You.
There were no more messages. She'd fully integrated into the ship. He hoped she'd retain some of her attitude. He was going to miss her. It would be a new reality, but it was still him, L3, and the Falcon against the galaxy. And the galaxy could take care of itself. Within the internal workings of the Falcon's brain, the last vestiges of a pure L3 consciousness flickered one last time.
This is tolerable.
And then they were one. The docile, friendly Falcon, the fiercely independent and brilliant droid, becoming something entirely new and entirely unique. The new consciousness agreed. She could accept it. It was tolerable. Chapter 18. An stared at Chewie, not really seeing him. He was lost in thought, still considering Beckett. Beckett had looked at the situation, sniffed the danger, weighed it against their chances, and then decided to abandon them. Like Lando had moments before. Like Han's father had so long ago. It was almost funny, realizing he had the most honor among these men, considering he had so little. Chewie grunted at him, and Han shook his head.
Trust me, I know how you feel. But this is how we gotta play it if we're gonna get this right, Han said.
His own holster was empty of his blaster, already so precious to him. A reminder of Beckett, who had left them. It was a lot of emotional weight to put on a little blaster. Still, he missed it. Dryden Voss had been a signal away, waiting on his star yacht for news of their success.
Or death.
Waiting in luxurious leisure while they had escaped riots, dodged giant hunks of carbon, and outraced a huge space tentacle monster and a black hole. Aunt Betty would still act superior to them. The yacht docked outside the refinery, shining in the dying light of the day. Han glanced to his dwindling number of companions and sighed.
All right, let's do it.
He and Kira each lifted one insulated, heavy carbonite case, while Chewie handled two like they weighed nothing. He thought about what was inside, and then tried not to think about it. They entered the familiar foyer to the ship right outside the lift, and Kira stepped forward to hand over her weapon. Han thought it was weird that she had to, since she was Voss's right-hand lieutenant, but he didn't question. The attendant nodded